1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Rhett Beard, and today in the studio, it's the second album by The Doors, entitled Strange Days.
When the music's over, when the music's over, turn up the lights, turn up the lights, turn up the lights. Your lost little girl, your lost little girl, your lost. Tell me, who are you? Heart beside the ocean on our moonlight drive. Oh, and remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
Vietnam was happening, social chaos was happening, black people weren't able to eat at a restaurant with white people,
That's right.
Big deal, they couldn't ride on a bus, are you insane, what's going on?
I'll meet you, John. I'm gone away.
So the social protest was definitely happening. Vietnam guys were starting to get slaughtered in Vietnam.
Escalating, getting worse.
Getting serious, yeah. It was no more advisors. Now we were starting to send troops over there, and that was young men off the street. So things were starting to get really kind of heavy in America, and Strange Days definitely reflects that. Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors, and it's Strange Days in the studio.
It certainly didn't take long for a cult of personality to build up around Jim Morrison and The Doors. By the time their first hit, Light My Fire, went to number one in July 1967, Jim Morrison was fast becoming a pop music icon, but he was so unlike the pop stars that had preceded him. There was, from the very first, a dark aura surrounding Morrison and his music. Jim Morrison's lyrics and his lifestyle reflected a near obsession with pain and his own demise, and it was that aura of mystery and danger, in death as well as life, that made Jim Morrison such a fascinating figure. Strange Days, The Doors' second album, was released in October of 1967. That's less than 4 months after Light My Fire hit number one. But even in that short space of time, it was clear The Doors had changed, that Morrison's visions were even darker than before. The cover photo on Strange Days is a strange street scene, weightlifters and carnival people, the band members visible only as figures on a small wall poster. I asked Doors keyboard player Ray Manzarek about that cover.
The band is no longer featured physically on the cover. It's now a
Fellini-esque carnival touring troupe, a little group of street entertainers who would wander around playing and entertaining for your nickels and dimes.
There's a bazaar.
It begins to get a little bizarre, doesn't it? Exactly.
The Doors had barely grasped the significance of their first album's success when it came time to record Strange Days. Like the first album, Strange Days was recorded at Sunset Sound Studios in Hollywood. Once again, Paul Rothchild was the producer. Ray Manzarek, keyboard player with The Doors, remembers.
So the social protest was definitely happening. Vietnam guys were starting to get slaughtered in Vietnam.
It was escalating. It was getting worse.
Getting serious, yeah. It was no more advisors. Now we were starting to send troops over there, and that was young men off the street. So things were starting to get really kind of heavy in America, and Strange Days definitely reflects that. Strange days have found us. Strange days have tracked us down. They're going to destroy our casual joys. That's what we had in 66, casual joys, and that's what Jim's starting to talk about. When Light My Fire hit number one, we got a lot of gig offers, naturally. We started playing a lot. We started going around the country. We weren't playing major venues yet. We were playing smaller auditoriums and large clubs in other parts of the country. The Action House in Long Island, I'll never forget that one. Great big club, huge club. For the money we made, it was great money at the time. My God, it was incredible. We were fat. We were just, and at the end of the year, we finally got a royalty check. I'll never forget that first royalty check. I couldn't believe it. I thought, my God, I don't believe this. We made $50,000 a piece. I thought, $50,000. Dorothy and I immediately went out and bought a house and got married.
Let's
bingo,
celebrate.
Let's go, honey. Now I can take care of you. Now I'm responsible. Oh, I can support you. Let's get married. Let's buy a house. That's the first thing we did. Worked out nicely.
If there was a theme that ran through Jim Morrison's lyrics, it was death. From the haunting The End on the first album, all the way through Riders on the Storm, their final recording, The Doors' music was filled with foreboding.
When we first got the idea of putting the band together, and the first thing he did was Moonlight Drive, and I heard those lyrics, let's swim to the moon, let's climb through the tide, penetrate the evening that the city sleeps to hide. I thought, whoa, heavy, psychedelic, that's so, it's got to do, it deals with the water, the primordial waters that we all come out of, and it also has a sense of dread in that it's our turn to try and park beside Moonlight Drive. We're going to die. It's our turn to die. And I thought, my God, yes, because if you confront death, then death has no fear for you anymore. You have to look it square in the face and say, hey, I'm going to die at some point. I'm not going to live my life running from death. Death is always there.
Open and no time.
Moonlight Drive was the first song that Jim Morrison ever played for Ray Manzarek there on Venice Beach. Also the first song the Doors ever rehearsed.
In An American Prayer, Jim says, "Death, old friend. Death, old friend." In a way, it is an old comforting friend who is eventually going to come to say, "Hey, it's time. Come on, come on, Ray, it's time. Come with me. I'm going to show you a whole new trip that you don't even have the vaguest idea what it's going to be. Come on, you know, have you lived life? Now come with me. I'm going to show you something." So we weren't afraid of death because we realized that death was just the other side of life and it was all infinity anyway.
Well, things definitely had started to change, you know, from that joyous everything is possible 1966 on the street and the Sunset Strip and the freaks and everything. Vietnam was happening. Social chaos was happening. You know, black people weren't able to eat at a restaurant with white people. You know,
that's right.
Big deal. They couldn't ride on a bus. Are you insane? What's going on?
Right.
So there was the incredible problems in the South and the sit-ins and everything and the Freedom Riders.
Even here in L.A.?
Oh, everywhere. Yeah, it was going on everywhere.
Oh,
the Watts riots, the Detroit riots had happened. You know, black people were demanding their share of the pie, deservedly so. And white people, you know, more liberal, advanced thinking white people were saying, "Hey, we are all brothers and sisters. The color of the skin doesn't matter." And so Light My Fire takes off. We're touring. We had, unfortunately, far too many gigs to do. And come October, we took the month of September off, polished up the songs, and went into the recording studio in October. And then, this is great, the recording studio was 8 tracks. It had gone from a 4-track machine to an 8-track.
The first album?
First album was only on 4 tracks.
Four tracks, exactly,
right. The second album was 8 tracks, and we had, you mean we could do everything we did on the first album and still have 4 more tracks to overdub guitars, sound effects, pianos, harmony vocals, anything we want? And Paul said, "Yeah, that's right, man." And the first day in the recording studio, he said, "Hey, listen to this. I just got the new Beatles album." We said, "Yeah, so what?" He said, no, listen to this one, man." And that Beatles album was Sgt. Pepper.
Wow.
And we listened to Sgt. Pepper and said, "Wow, the Beatles, what has happened to them?" Obviously psychedelicized, man. These guys are now men. These are not boys anymore. These are now men. They had grown up and become men and were really doing something. And we heard that album and said, "Wow, okay, we got a lot of work to do here." You know, because there's always that competitive spirit. Yes. You always want to top whoever is on top. And we said, "Man, we got to go to work. Let's make this the best album we can." And Paul said, "Well, we got 4 extra tracks, man. Let's go crazy." And that's what we did. Strange Days was like mad scientists in the laboratory. The Doors trying anything.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange.
Strange days indeed. When we come back, you'll hear the story behind Love Me Two Times from The Doors' second album. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio on the golden anniversary of Strange Days by The Doors.
Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors, and it's Strange Days in the studio.
From the In the Studio archives, the late co-founder of The Doors, keyboard player Ray Manzarek. Although Jim Morrison tended to grab most of the headlines, much of The Doors' music was written by Ray Manzarek and guitarist Robbie Krieger. As Manzarek explains, it was Robbie Krieger who wrote Love Me Two Times. But on Strange Days, their second album, the lyrics began to have political connotations as well.
Love Me Two Times is one of Robbie's great blues songs, written in essence for some of the guys going over to Vietnam.
Really?
We're going to Vietnam, so love me two times, baby, because I'm going away. You know, it's a song about guys, from our perspective, going on the road, but also a sense of a guy is going to Vietnam. Love me two times, girl.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today. Love me two times, girl. I'm gone away. Love me two times, girl. One for tomorrow, one just for today. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me one time, do not speak. Love me one time, yeah, my knees got weak. Love me two times, girl. Last me all through the week. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Not speak. Love me one time, baby. Yeah, my knees got weak. Love me two times, girl. Last week, all through the week. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today. Two time, babe, 'cause I'm going away. Love me two time, girl. One for tomorrow, one just for today. Love me two time.
Inspired by what they'd heard on the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's, the Doors were eager to experiment in the studio, trying to create new sounds in any way that they could for their second album, Strange Days. Again, Ray Manzarek.
I even played one of the tracks backwards. I played a backwards piano track. It's on Unhappy Girl.
Oh,
I wrote out all the chord changes and wrote out measure by measure by measure and wrote the chord changes in each measure and started, the tape was flipped over, and I started playing to the tape from the bottom right-hand side. and worked my way. It's like, you know, reverse Chinese. Chinese and Japanese don't even do it that way. At the bottom of the page and worked my way across to the left, then up to the next line on the right-hand side and worked my way across, hoping that I was, you know, I had the rhythm. I was in the rhythm of the song and hoping that I was on the beat. And at the end of the song, when I ended, the song began. I thought, I've done it. I just did it. And I thought to myself, how the hell did I do this? I'm not even going to ask. Let me listen to it. Went into the control room and heard it, and sure enough, everything worked. Backwards piano track. But that's the state we were in. We were in a state of mind that was such a heightened state of excitement and possibilities. The possibilities were endless. We could do anything we wanted. That we could even play an entire song backwards on the piano. Why not? Possible. Let's do it. Horse Latitudes is a poem that Jim wrote when he was 17 years old, 16, 17 years old, one of his first poems. And we decided to do a musique concrète, do some crazy sounds behind it. And Paul Rothschild and Bruce Botnick had a grand time recording that. They were so pleased with it. They finally, when they made the mix, and they said, "You guys, Lee, let us make a mix of this, and you don't have to be here for this. Just, we want to surprise you." And we walked in, and we heard just this monster chaos of sound, and we thought, "Ah, Paul, Bruce, you guys are so great." They were great. They were like door five and door six. Working with them in the studio was like there were six guys making a record. Four musicians, two technicians, and Paul was in between the artist and technician. And it was fabulous working with those guys.
Producer Paul Rothschild was a great believer in getting the proper emotional mood for a recording session. For one song on Strange Days, Rothschild even had a nude girl accompany Jim Morrison into the recording booth. Ray Manzarek gives another example.
I can't see her face in my mind. A very, very lovely, beautiful little sort of oriental style ballad. And when we were recording it, we had a tough time getting it. It was so tranquil and so nice, and everyone was so hopped up in the studio that we had to do it a couple of times before we finally got it. And Rothschild, this was fun, Paul Rothschild is going to do his producer number on us. So he says, "Okay, listen, turn the lights out." I said, "Well, Paul, we can't play in the dark, man. We got to see the instruments." He said, no, I got some candles. So he came in and he lit candles in the room, and he started to burn some incense, and he said, "Now listen, you guys, I want you to think," and he starts trying to hypnotize us, "I want you to think you're in a Japanese garden, and it's a beautiful girl, and la da da dee 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 dee." And we said, "Okay, Paul, that sounds great. That's the way we should do it." And as he was walking out of the room, Robbie turned to me and said,
that asshole, what does he think he's doing? He's not hypnotizing us. And I said, well, you know, come on. I mean, he's a producer. He's doing his job, you know. It's like a director. He's doing, setting the mood. Okay, well, let's play the song. Sure enough, the mood didn't work. It did work, yeah, because we got a very, well, the rendition that's on the album, very, very tranquil, very sweet.
I can't see your face in my mind. I can't see your face in my mind.
Doors on Strange Days with I Can't See Your Face in My Mind, recorded by Candlelight. Up next, Ray Manzarek of The Doors tells us about writing Your Lost Little Girl. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio. Strange Days by The Doors.
Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors, and it's Strange Days in the studio.
Strange Days was an album of ominous, sometimes threatening music, but one of the strangest songs on the album was a simple, if somewhat somber, ballad. It had been written by The Doors in the hope that Frank Sinatra would record it for his girlfriend, later wife, Mia Farrow. It's called Your Lost Little Girl. The late co-founder of The Doors, keyboard player Ray Manzarek, with me in the studio.
The whole point of it was music and poetry. We were going to try to be like the Beatniks, who had jazz and poetry. Oh. We were going to make rock music and poetry, and in our music incorporate all the elements that we could do. I brought in a sort of a classical music and a jazz background. John Densmore was a jazz drummer, and Robbie Krieger was a folk blues, Robert Johnson, and flamenco guitar player. So he brought that element in, and we tried to put, and Jim, of course, was an incredible poet and read books like crazy, just a voluminous reader. He was amazing what he could devour. So we tried to put everything we had inside of us into the music, and, you know, that's what you have to do in music. And it worked, man.
your lost little girl. Your lost little girl. Your lost, tell me who are you? Think that you know what to do. Impossible, yes, but it's true. I think that you know what to do. Tell me, who are you?
Lost Little Girl from The Doors' second album, Strange Days, written for Old Blue Eyes. One song on Strange Days embodied all The Doors' moodiness, all of the music's hypnotic power, and all of Jim Morrison's chillingly prophetic sense of impending doom. Ray Manzarek remembers the unconventional recording of When the Music's Over.
It's the last song we had left to do, and it's a afternoon, 2 o'clock recording session starts. Only one song left. Jim doesn't show up. Where's Jim? I don't know. Does anybody know where Jim is? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, called his place. No, he's not there. Well, call Pam, see if he's there. Yeah, called Pam. No, he's not there. And God, I don't know where he is. Well, he'll be along. Well, what'll we do? Well, let's record. I thought, wait a minute. What do you mean, let's record? And Paul said, let's record. You guys know the song. I said, wait a minute. You don't understand. This song is an improvisation. It's got, you know, you don't know exactly where everything comes in. And Robbie said, well, you know, we can probably work it out, imagine where Jim is going to come in and all that. And I said, yeah, well, we have played it. We know how the song goes. I'll tell you what, give me a vocal mic. I'll do vocal cues. So we start to play the song, and I'm doing Jim's parts. I knew the words and everything. We always knew all the words. All the Doors knew all the words to all the songs. I think that's why we played so well together. We knew what everything was all about. So I start singing the song for vocal cues, hoping that they're going to be within the framework that Jim's going to be working in. And I know him pretty well, and we all know each other, but this is really some serious guesswork going on here. But I'm operating, again, it's like the backwards piano. I'm operating in a whole different frame of mind, really trying to put myself into where Jim would be hearing the song. So we recorded, we did two takes, and got very, very good performance out of the band. Now, around 7 o'clock, Jim comes in. I said, where you been? He said, well, I was, you know, fine, let's, and he said, well, let's do When the Music's Over. And we said, well, we've done the tracks. He said, you did the track? Yeah, what we're hoping is that you'll just go in and feel it and just feel it and sing along with it. said, okay, I'll give that a shot. Goes into the vocal booth, puts the earphones on, and steps up to the microphone. We put on the playback, record on his track, and we were all absolutely amazed. He got every single cue. He just went right through it and just nailed every place that I paused, he paused. Every place that I would come back in to sing, bam, he was right on top of it. He didn't hear my voice or anything. He didn't know anything at all. He just heard the music being played, and he was right on top of it. We all fell out of the chairs and said, holy cow, how the hell did he do it? I don't believe it. Yeah, Jim!
There was a dark magic about Jim Morrison, a sense of otherworldliness. Ray Manzarek felt it, and he remembers a story that Morrison once told Ray, a story of spirits and troubled souls.
He was 5 years old. They were in the Arizona-New Mexico desert. His father was stationed at, I think, Los Alamos, proving testing grounds. And they were driving in the New Mexico desert at dawn, as Jim told me the story. And he told me this one a long time ago. And he said they came across a carload, small pickup truck that had overturned on the highway. There was like a thunderstorm on the desert, and it was a strange kind of ominous day on the desert. You know, it doesn't rain in the desert, and to see thunderclouds in the desert, it's an ominous, portentous sight. And the father woke him up, said, Jimmy, wake up, you've got to see this, saying, wake up and see the thunderclouds and the storm on the desert. So this five-year-old kid in the backseat of the car wakes up, and when he wakes up, what does he see? He doesn't see the storm clouds. He sees these dead Indians scattered, as he puts it, on Dawn's Highway, bleeding to death. Then he told me the story. He said, I don't know if I'm crazy or what, but the spirit, the soul of one of those Indians, or a couple of them, I don't know what, just jumped into my body, man, and took over, and they're still in there. And you know, I said, I don't believe it, but I do believe it. What I think that guy did was, it was probably an old shaman who was dying, and he looked at that kid and in that instant realized that boy was important, that boy could be something. He could help this Indian spread the Indian message of love of Mother Nature, respect for the earth, respect for the planet. You know, Indians feel about the planet, and obviously the white man doesn't feel that way, man. We're the rapers. Right. You know, we rape this planet and take everything out and make garbage, and with the nuclear and the horrible stuff that we do, we don't know how to clean up after ourselves.
Very good.
The Indian knows how to clean up after himself and has reverence for the earth, and that's what we
knows
as
how
white
he
men,
fits in also.
And he fits in, right. We dominate. He is part of it. So that Indian shaman said, with this boy, I could perhaps spread that message to the white man to make this earth a better place. And shoom, jumps into that kid's soul, man, and says, I'm going to occupy this.
When the music's over, turn out the lights, turn out.
Until the end. Cancel my subscription to the resurrection. Send my credentials to the house of detention. I got some friends inside. Face in the mirror won't stop. The girl in the window won't drop. A feast of friends, alive, she cried, waiting for me outside. Before I sing into the big sleep, I want to hear, I want to hear the scream of the butterfly. Getting tired of hanging around. Waiting around with our heads to the ground. I hear a very gentle sound. Very near yet, very far. Very soft, yeah, very clear. Come today, come today. What have they done to the earth? What have they done to our fair sister? Ravaged and plundered and ripped her and bit her. Stuck her with knives in the sight of the dawn. And tied her with fences and dragged her down.
I hear a very gentle sound. With your ear down to the ground. We want the world and we want it. Now.
Sure enough, you know, 20 years later, out comes Jim Morrison from When the Music's Over with lines like, what have they done to the earth? What have they done to our fair sister? Ravaged and ripped her and bit her and stuck her with knives in the side of the dawn, tied her with fences and dragged her down. I hear a very gentle sound. That's the Indian, man. That is the Indian coming out in him. This was not Jim joining a bandwagon or anything. This was a guy speaking from the depths of his soul.
So when the music's over, when the music's over, yeah. When the music's music's over, turn out the lights, turn out the lights, turn out the lights. While the music is your special friend, dance on fire as Indian turns.
When the music's over, I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking the dearly departed Ray Manzarek. God rest his soul. He is really missed. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.